This is Mae Brussel. It's part two of World Watchers, program number 807. I certainly hope that many of you tape these broadcasts off the air. I just ran through maybe 30 very, very important articles, and just having them here in front of me is mind-boggling. So I know that rattling them off one after the other is and can be very confusing. I don't know the alternative. I can spend 15 or 20 minutes on each article or let you just get an overview of some of the material that's coming out and hopefully get back to it later. That's a decision I have to make each week. But I don't want you to think I'm missing some of these stories that are coming out, and some I know you're not getting at all in your newspapers. And it's better to just get a glimpse of the overview sometimes because we do have so much material coming out. There is a book called The Chronology, the documented day-by-day account of the secret military assistance to the Iran-Contra affairs. I'm going to get it. I haven't gotten it yet. It's published by Warner Books. It's a paperback, and it might be helpful in understanding some of the players. There was a book by Bernard Fensterwald regarding the Watergate investigation that he called Coincidence or Conspiracy. And even though Fensterwald is an attorney for the Central Intelligence Agency, it's one of the best books written about Watergate because it takes certain characters, not all of them, and gives profiles of them and gives pictures. And when those names reappear later in other articles or books, or at any time, you get a vision of who they are, and it's very helpful to have this directory. Another book that is out is titled, What Do You Know About the Iran-Iraq War? This is 1495. It's published by Liberty Library, 300 Independence Avenue, Southeast, Washington, D.C., 20003. Now, it may be filled with propaganda. Some of it may be true, some may not be true. It's hard to judge these things. But there are very few books out on the Iran-Iraq War, so I just wanted to mention that to you. There were witnesses this past week, John Singlaub and John Garwood, William O'Boyle and Joseph Coors. And while they were testifying, it was the forum to tell you about democracy, the wonders of the Contras, the miracle they were doing, getting rid of the horrible Sandinistas where they have no freedom of the press. And in the process of their telling you these stories, they told you how they got assistance from the great democracies of the world, such as Saudi Arabia, Taiwan, South Korea, and Brunei, that have no La Prensa, have no free press, that have death squads, that have terrible standards of living, where there's the very rich and very poor that are constantly in turmoil, that are not representative of the people. So who do they go to for money? America, the democracy, for the freedom fighters who are removing jaws and teeth and burning Americans so we won't know what's happening at home. They go to the dictatorships of Saudi Arabia, Taiwan, South Korea, Brunei, and those are the epitome of democracies. And as I mentioned before, they also use the Argentine military junta for assistance. And now John Singlaub is in Laos, and he wanted to send the Laotian tribesmen, the heroin poppy-growing tribesmen, over here to assist the Contras, and he's working over in Laos at this time. Also, John Singlaub is involved in the island of Pelu, and I want to link the island of Pelu, share it with you. There was an article in Nation magazine written by Christopher Hitchens, May the 9th, on New Zealand and the problems in the Pacific, and the island of Pelu, which is a protector of the United States, wants a nuclear-free constitution. They've been trying to have, and of course, what happens in that country? In 1985, someone went to all the trouble of murdering Pelu's president, Haruo Remilik. In the first use of a handgun on the island that bans firearms, in 7 years it was banned, and he was killed, and Pelu is the fallback base in the event of a U.S. withdrawal from the Philippines. Now, along those lines, and I do want to share Oliver North's offices, the National Endowment for Democracy, and the money he gave to the Pacific Democratic Union that goes into New Zealand to the right wing there. And it is under the control of General John Singlaub, and the World Anti-Communist League. And along those lines, a listener to World Watches from Santa Cruz sent me a lot of information on Palau and the problems there in trying to keep it a nuclear-free country. And it goes into John Singlaub's role there and the repression. I'll give you the address where you can write to these people. It's called Worldwide Nuclear Sovereignty Campaign, Palau Support Action Alert. And again, this has to do with John Singlaub, Oliver North, the World Anti-Communist League. Write to P.O. Box 1057, Bolinas, B-O-L-I-N-A-S, California, 94924, and ask for information on this area. I'm particularly interested, after I saw that movie Half-Life, of the experimentations of the hydrogen bombs in the Marshall Islands and the consequences of that. I have felt very deeply about studying more about these islands. The president ordered, their newsletter came out recently that said the president ordered, announced that Palau's power and light would be cut off nightly until a 8th election is held and the nuclear ban is revoked. The people want a nuclear-free zone, and since they wanted that, the electricity and water is cut off every night, and they can't have it. Now, this is a long newsletter. Again, I'll get into more of it later, and it tells about the red baiting of the Constitution and the support of John Whitehall in Australia by the Christian World Anti-Communist League, and he's part of the Anti-Communist Crusader, and he's trying to take care of the newspapers to publish an independent newspaper in Palau. And he works with John Singlaub, an ex-CIA agent implicated in the Iran-Contra affair. And the statistics on the Marshall Islands and on the treatment of Palau and the hazardous waste and what is happening in Fiji, that island is mentioned here. And, of course, they just had a coup recently. I'll share this material with you very soon. And, as I say, it goes into the links of John Singlaub now in the Philippines with Mr. Enrile, getting ready to overthrow that country and put it in the hands of the narcotics traffic, not the freedom fighters, but the same people that were behind the Marcos administration. And Singlaub is over in the Philippines and in Laos and in Palau. While he's a defendant in the Christic Institute suit, he is Mr. Big floating around these various islands now and making trouble in the Pacific region. That's his home base from his service in Southeast Asia and in Korea. He's the right person to be doing it for the wrong reasons. They have selected their right person. And to see John Singlaub testify and be treated with such respect by the entire team of the Democrats and Republicans and attorneys of the Iran-Contra affair, you could really puke. I hope your television isn't so close that you smear it on the screen as you watch some of these people and the fawning of the alleged investigators over these marvelous freedom fighters who've done nothing but kill and deal in drugs since World War II. Another publication I want you to order, I can't put it all on the air right now, from the Resource Center. I gave that address once before, Box 4506, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87196. They have a long article, four pages, on covert operations in Central America. And this goes into the AFL, the CIO, Project Democracy, the National Endowment for Democracy, Oliver North's groups, and how it lingers and mingles with the National Security Council and the hanky-pank that they've been pulling in Central America for many, many years since World War II. They also have booklets, and I mentioned the Iran-Iraq book. They sell booklets at that address, $5 each, that explain some of the things that are happening, and it's very important that you get the other side of this story, particularly since the entire investigation is praising the Central American freedom fighters, and not one Democrat has gotten up to explain why the Boland Amendment was passed in the first place. You can send for booklets on El Salvador, the other war, the new right, humanitarians, in quotes, the new battlefield in Central America, Guatemala, the politics of counterinsurgency, AILField, that's the American Institute for Free Labor and Development, founded by J. Peter Grace, their role in Chile, destabilization of Nicaragua, a rain of dollars, U.S. economic intervention in Central America, focused on the Eastern Caribbean, bananas, bucks, and books, transnational corporations in the Caribbean, destabilization. So there's approximately 10 books. There's another book, The Other Side of Paradise, Foreign Control of the Caribbean, and a Central American Factbook. I'm going to order all of them And I think a person should at least get one and be knowledgeable about what is going on and how we are pleading ignorance and allowing our country and the members of Congress to pass the money needed to keep these situations perpetuating themselves. Now, last week when I came into the radio station for World Watchers, Ronald Reagan's little tip into the Persian Gulf was just beginning. And on program number 806 last week, I just had a few comments. Ronald Reagan's Gulf of Tonkin, the diversionary in the Persian Gulf, it's a great media diversionary. The U.S. Navy ship was struck by Iraq missile. No more Gary Hart to kick around. We had 2 weeks of Hart. And on Monday, the third week of the hearings, where very important testimony would be taken. And, of course, this past week, John Singlaub, and then there was General Secord. The hearings were blocked out, and the importance of the region strategically to the United States became the emphasis, as if to say this is why we were dealing there in the first place. The Washington Post had a very interesting story about Iran-Iraq, February the 20th, titled, North Gave Prohibited Data to the Iranians. NSC computer messages describe information sharing. Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North gave Iran top-secret information. President Reagan authorized limited sharing of intelligence with Iran when he approved of arms sales to Iran, but two sources say the evidence in the computer messages discloses that North passed data from secret and top intelligence designated no foreign, meaning no foreign national. It is unclear precisely what type of intelligence North provided, although one knowledgeable said this information would have aided Iran in the seven-year war with Iraq. Ali was running his own covert operation within the authorized covert operation. And I bring this up again because I believe that Ronald Reagan was indebted to the Iranians for releasing the hostages at the time of the first election in 1980, holding them back till Jimmy Carter lost the election. And he's been blackmailed ever since to send information to Iran, even though he's tilting in favor of Iraq, he was obligated, so Ali North had to be doing the paying and the messages just as Secord helped to assist Iran after Iran was in the hands of Khomeini and they, in quotes, were doing it on their own. This says he ran his own covert on within the authorized covert operation, adding that it wasn't clear to investigators whether North had the approval from his boss, Admiral Poindexter. The CIA and U.S. intelligence agencies, others, they don't say the Department of Defense, are reluctant to share classified information abroad unless an exchange was worked out with a foreign intelligence service and the exchanges are monitored and controlled. It could not be learned when North passed this on to Iran. He did it under the table. The computer messages disclose his actions, and they were turned over to Senator Tower, of course, who did nothing with them. A senior official said yesterday that North's freelance intelligence sharing designed to win the release of American hostages being held in Lebanon, and this was to win the congressional votes, of course, for 1986, and he wanted to build credibility with Iranians, may turn out to be a nightmare, demonstrating the administration was operating at cross purposes. Reagan had formally authorized the covert sharing of intelligence with Iraq, including information from sensitive U.S. satellite reconnaissance. So Reagan had formally authorized covert operations with Iraq, and Ali North, to get the hostages home for the election, was offering the same papers to Iran, hoping that Reagan would have a full sweep of emotion as he brought home the hostages before the last congressional election. The article said a key legal question raised by the message is whether North believed he had authorization from his superiors to pass the intelligence to Iran if he were acting on his own. He may have violated espionage laws for military personnel. They can be convicted and even carry the death penalty. I don't believe that will happen. However, if North was given authorization, he may not have violated the law. The Senate committee has spent weeks investigating whether or not North was pressing senior officials to show samples of U.S. intelligence to Iranian contacts. The intelligence he provided Iran was separate from the samples he obtained from the CIA. The Senate report said that Robert Gates, who was deputy CIA director at that time, objected to the release of the information to Iran. Gates testified that he objected to the release of specific intelligence relating to Iraq, but he was overruled by the National Security Council and the CIA was directed to prepare intelligence materials. The report said a CIA official was directed to take the intelligence sample to Manikur Gurbanifar, the Iranian middleman. CIA and Gurbanifar distrusted each other. He didn't pass lie detector tests, but North and Gurbanifar had a working, close working relationship, which would explain, you know, trying to get those hostages out for the election, and that he trusted them. And in addition to the secret authorized sharing of intelligence with Iran and Iraq, the revelation of North's unauthorized intelligence to Iran would mean that the administration was using three channels of secret data to participate in a war that the United States was officially neutral. Last August, the CIA had established a top-secret Washington-Baghdad link to ensure that the Iraqis received higher quality and more timely satellite intelligence, the sources have said. And if they got all that, it would explain why Iraq was allowed and told for this missile to hit the American ship, which the Iranians said was to create our presence in the Persian Gulf. And it came just the Monday of the third week of the hearings. The article says the second route was William Casey took a personal hand in developing intelligence sharing with Iraq, again with Iraq, and met at least twice in the fall with senior Iraq officials to make certified they were satisfied with the channel and to encourage them to make more lethal attacks on Iranian installations. This is the double dealing of our teams, to give the most secret material to Iraq and also then give some to Iran to get the hostages. And remember, this Iranian team were there to get a new government in Iran, to plan the murder of Ayatollah Khomeini, and to take over Iran because of its strategic importance against the Soviet Union and so forth. Now, concluding this article, it says, at the time, the secret intelligence sharing with Iraq was publicly disclosed in December, at the time of the Iran-Contra affair breaking open, because then it looked like we were arming Iran and not favoring Iraq. So it broke open that we were sharing vital information with Iraq. A well-placed government official said that the policy of helping Iran and Iraq was a cynical attempt to engineer a stalemate in the war. The cynical part is that we were sending arms to Iran so that we get the hostages out before the election so Reagan could get a Republican House and a Republican Senate. And if he did, and he was right, it was important, there wouldn't be anything like the Iran Contra investigations at this time. If it was all Republican, they keep saying on television the hearings are boring. Nothing is accomplished. Robert Novak keeps using the word boring, just repetitious, you know, and the Sunday talk shows and Agronsky and McLaughlin reports and all those junk shows miss the whole point because they're defending the system. But the matter was that they wanted the arms to Iran. They wanted to get a Senate and a House that were Republican. And the cynical other part was to control the Persian Gulf by helping Iraq, which may strategically be right, but we're certainly going about it in crazy ways. Now, I've taken the headlines of a lot of pertinent articles from this past week because I began by saying that the Iran-Iraq conflict was a Gulf of Tonkin, meaning an agent provocateur excuse to stay in the Persian Gulf. And not only strategically to be there, we have seven major ships there, but it takes all the news off of the Iran-Contra hearings. And there's one important point, is that Ronald Reagan, not only when he talks about Iran, quotes John Kennedy, but he has a Franklin Roosevelt complex. And I've mentioned this before in the year. I can see us in World War III, in a war. I can see his grabbing the war policy decisions. I can see his not getting out of the White House with all these investigations coming down and all the disgraces he'll have to sit and listen to when he's in 666 St. Cloud Road in Bel Air, California. He'd much rather be here with all the sugarcoating that he gets and the flags waving and the music. And I could see him wanting to be commander-in-chief at wartime, like Franklin Roosevelt. And so there are several reasons for him is doing the things he's doing. It's a great diversionary, and it plays into the minds of Jerry Falwell and the very devout Christians around him who've had the Armageddon complex for years. And I've done many broadcasts on that, the idea that the Third World War against the Christian the Antichrist, Russia, the Marxist, Leninist, the Antichrist, would be defeated and the war would start in the Persian Gulf. So we have a diversionary, we have a religious motive, but the diversionary is great, as I say, starting the day of the third week. Now, here are some of the headlines, given that state of mind that I have. New York Times, May the 14th, and there were many articles. I'm just taking one of each different topic and not all of them, and also Mother Jones, April 1987, Iraq chemical war cited by the United Nations. Iraq has stepped up its chemical weapons against Iran. They never denied using chemical weapons, nerve gas, and these articles say even Adolf Hitler didn't use these gases, and they're using them. San Francisco Examiner, U.S. reflagging of Kuwaiti tankers, unwarranted, risky purpose to limit USSR influence in the region. That's the headline. Unwarranted, risky purpose to limit the Soviet influence. All this being done because Iraq hit an American ship. Iraqi jets, similar to the ones that attacked the same area, were given a warning, several warnings. The LA Times said May 21st, the planes were within 20 miles of the destroyer, and there was time to tell them about warnings of what they were going after or who was there. Face the Nation, Casper Weinberger was saying this the past Sunday. The motive for being there is to keep the Soviet Union from having access to the seas, to the ocean. And it reminded me of a television series going on at the present time about Edward VII and Queen Victoria. There was no communism or Marxism, but the fear of the two small islands, Japan and Great Britain, was that the Russia in those days and Soviet Union today would interfere with the monopoly and the island hopping of Japan and Great Britain. And Caspar Weinberger said on Face the Nation, even if there were no Marxism, it's strategically important. It's not a question of communists. It's geography. I'm just translating what he said, but those were the thoughts he had. An editorial in the LA Times, May 21st, a dubious explanation. U.S. officials are responsible for the Stark attack. Why are we aiding Iraq? Iraq is equal threat to the United States as Iran is. Who determined the Stark should not ever be alert to attack, as well as, say, attacking Iran? Who determined this, the editorial said. And then another large article in the LA Times, no time to fire, the U.S. skipper says. This is May 21st. He didn't have time to fire, and the other account was they watched this airplane for 2 hours and warned them. Plan to aid Kuwait ships draws fire, and you've all seen that. Representative Tom Lantos, the one who said, Ollie, Ollie, you're such a wonderful hero. Well, to cover Ollie, Ollie, the hero, he's getting his good diversionary. Lantos says this surely means we become a party to the Iran-Iraq war in the Middle East, and he's aware that this could trigger World War III. Another article, other powers hold the Gulf War talks, and this was before all of this, May the 14th. Five UN Security Council members met 1 week before the Iraq missile hit the American plane. They were seeking troop withdrawal, a ceasefire in the Middle East, and just 1 week before Reagan allowed this to happen. Washington Post, May 14th, Iran denounces the U.S. Soviet aid to Kuwait. Moscow said the growing support for Iraq and the superpowers is depriving Iran of an option that they might have to retaliate. 28 ships have been attacked recently. New York Times, February 28th, 1987, this was a while back, a Solomon Schwartz was arrested. He's an arms dealer who works with Oliver North, Frank Turple. His name has been mentioned. Is working with the National Security Council with a gentleman arrested in Brazil for about to invade Ghana to take that over. He was arrested in February this year for sending weapons to Iraq. Other countries he was sending them to were the Soviet Union, Poland, and Argentina. Argentina is where the weapons were supplied to the CIA mercenaries recruited by Robert Brown, the co-partner of Robert Owen and John Singlaub, and Solomon Schwartz was sending weapons to Iraq. San Francisco Chronicle, March 3rd. Iraq diplomat tells of meeting with Oliver North. Now, this March 6th, rather. Now, this is just 2 months ago that the Iraq diplomat was meeting with North. The Iraq ambassador to UN, the story accounted for was 2 weeks ago. The meeting was last year in 1986. Ambassador Nizar Hamdoun was in the White House, and he was discussing the Iraqi military situation, meeting with Oliver North and President Reagan in the White House last year. Another story, Iran warns the United States not to increase its presence in the Persian Gulf. Hussein Sheikh Khorasan said Iraq deliberately attacked the Stark to increase involvement of the U.S., the Western nations. And he's the Deputy Foreign Minister for Political Affairs. And, of course, that's what I call the Gulf of Tonkin syndrome that Iraq deliberately was allowed to attack. Another story, Reagan defends his role in the Persian Gulf. He said to retreat and withdraw would only repeat the improvidence, the mistakes of the past, and the final victory to those who seek war, who make war. I mean, such double talk. Thomas Buchanan must be back reading his speeches that to withdraw would give a victory to people who want war. San Francisco Chronicle, White House was rebuking Richard Murphy, the Secretary of State, the State Department chief Middle East expert. He said that flying our U.S. flag in the Persian Gulf could bring about a war. Now, Reagan doesn't want warnings that this could bring a war, because then he have to be told he was warned in advance. So he's furious at Mr. Murphy. Many of you saw or read how angry he was to even mention that. Monday, the day of the attack, was May the 18th. As I say, that was the third week of the Contra investigations beginning, and that was the day of the attack. Wall Street Journal has had the best articles on the Iran-Iraq war. May 19th, they said Iraq warplanes attack came after two warnings from the U.S. ship that they had been tracking the aircraft for more than 1 hour. May 19th, there was an editorial in the Wall Street Journal separate from that. The Navy had ample warning an Iraqi aircraft was headed towards a U.S. frigate. Radar tracked the plane from takeoff 2 hours earlier. Admiral Vice Henry Mustick said the Stark had enough time to launch countermeasures. Officials from the State Department and the Pentagon responded charitably to the Iraq attack on the Stark. They used such terms as inadvertent or no indication of deliberate hostile intent and a mistaken attack. This was a continuance of a dubious policy of winking at Iraq's misdeeds in hope of rapprochement. The State Department in 1982 took Iraq off the list of international terrorist countries, even though they were long identified with terrorism. Iraq had been the headquarters of Abu Nidal, the terrorist group, until it moved to Syria and Libya. And last year, the PLO moved its military command to Baghdad. The Hussein regime has an extensive history of crimes against domestic political foes. It has broken international laws by using poison gas. We are dealing here in a duplicitous Middle East, but it stretches credibility to imagine the highly trained pilot of an advanced fighter purposely flew down the Persian Gulf, locked his radar on a U.S. frigate, and fired a missile by inadvertence. The Pentagon and the State Department might profit from being less quick in granting forgiveness and more vigorous in demanding to know why the Stark was attacked and why it wasn't ready. That is the Wall Street Journal. They also had another long article, May the 21st. The Reagan administration is plunging even deeper into the troubled waters of the Middle East. The Iraq attack is producing a more pronounced U.S. tilt toward Iraq in the Gulf War. In Lebanon, Mr. Reagan is upping the ante despite divisions within his own administration and between the White House and Congress. He's using military force to solve political problems. And again, he's using that because this is a diversionary that doesn't make sense to anybody until they start addressing themselves to the fact of what he has to cover up and how important it is to use the military, not sit and have dialogue, but quick action that draws attention from what he's covering up. The Wall Street Journal said both the civilian leadership of the Pentagon and the Joint Chiefs of Staff are wary of diverting American force from their primary mission of confronting the Soviets. They don't like to be diverted from that, especially into conflicts which escalate suddenly and unpredictably. In Congress, loyal Republicans are wary of writing a blank check to keep the Persian Gulf open, especially when 7% of the oil gets to the United States through the Strait of Hormuz, compared with 70% of Japan, and also the European allies get about 50%. Are we becoming a silent partner to the Iran-Iraq war, said Representative Lantos, and I gave you that quotation before. Lawmakers are worrying that they are skirting, the president is skirting the War Powers Act by sending the Navy into a combat zone without the consent of Congress. The abrupt withdrawal of the Marines from Lebanon, the administration's inability to deliver a token military aid to Jordan and Saudi Arabia, the secret attempts to ransom American hostages in Lebanon by selling arms to Iran and paying off Lebanese terrorists have undermined America's already limited credibility in the Arab world. And there are many more articles I want to share with you on the Iran-Iraq war, but time is running out. Maybe I'll do more next week on that, because this is something that Reagan has quickly jumped into. It has taken the attention of all the news, the talk shows, and of course he and Nancy are great at funerals. They've buried 300 Americans at this time now, including the hijackers, the peacekeeping force from the Middle East, the Lebanon Marine disaster, the grenade invasion, the Challenger explosion, and they get a lot of hugs and kisses from the family, who are forever grateful. But this is a situation brought on at a particular time for no reason at all, except that it serves the purposes of this administration to keep us into that battle scene so that what they're doing with the Contras and with other countries around the world will not be so noticeable. This is Mae Bressel. I'll be back to update more of these and other scandalous news with you next week. In the meantime, take care and keep reading those papers and watch the television hearings if you possibly can.